Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, and you. We are loaded this midweek edition, getting you ready for the kickoff of 2018. Nebraska and Akron will run down our favorite Carolina Panther, Jeremiah Searles, in 15 minutes. His thoughts on his beloved Big Red. And I think Carolina is on the road to Pittsburgh for the final preseason game. So some Searles of wisdom coming up in about 20 minutes, a little less than, on the way here with Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Thompson of Wilderness Ridge, tremendous pro, great teacher, and doing some awesome stuff here coming up 2 weeks from Monday, as he is going to do a fundraiser event in association with the great folks of Folds of Honor, benefiting military families, military members injured, with scholarship and financial resources. So we'll talk with Chris Thompson of Wilderness Ridge about that in 30 minutes. 1 hour from now, it's Brad Edwards of ESPN.com and Magazine, College Football Insider, College Game Day. He is getting geared up for his schedule. And then a familiar name you know if you love college football. How about Bowden? Terry Bowden, head coach of Akron, with us at 5:25. Your chance this hour, your chance next hour to qualify for Nebraska-Akron tickets. We'll give that away 5:25 on Thursday to get you into the stadium. And you can see Coach Frost, Nebraska, kick off this season and the Frost era. Can tap the line. Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 1-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. Follow us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, or at Danny Burke 5. Can email. We'll get to those if you like. Chris at HailVarsity.com. Busy day. It was offense day today. Coach Walters spent some time talking about the Big Red. As you'd imagine, there was plenty of quarterback discussion. And we'll hear from Super Mario Verduzco here in a minute. Danny, you sweating? You doing okay? How are your Cubs doing?
Well, we got that walk-off win earlier today because we got rained out in extras last night.
Well, but it's Wednesday, which means it's walk-off Wednesday.
There you go. Perfect. But no, second game, you know, Madden just put a crapshoot of a lineup out there. We had a Triple-A pitcher in there. He's like 5-12. He had a good outing last week, but now we're getting blown out. But I hit the over, so it's all that matters. I stayed away from the money line, but I got that over, baby.
I love it. You find the silver lining with your team losing. Pretty good. The schedules have been unveiled for the Big Ten football seasons 2022 through 2025. Some impressions, some thoughts on that here in a minute. But Mario Verduzco asked about the quarterback situation today. And I'm going to try and put the Jebbia stuff to bed. I know we've spent time on it on Monday, on Tuesday, but this is the first time we've had a chance to hear from Super Mario on it, his position coach, and he was pretty much blown away. He was shocked by it.
There was no indication to me whatsoever that any of this was going to take place. And if there was any indication to me, it would have been coming upon me to say, hey, Coach Frost, I think this might take place. We got to have some forward thinking about it and a plan, so on and so forth. But I can tell you when I talked to Tristan on Saturday, he said, Coach, I'm going to work as hard as I ever have. And when my number's called, I'll be ready to go. And I'll be one of Adrian's biggest supporters. And he thanked me for our professionalism in terms of how we handled it and that he didn't have to hear it in the internet and all that sort of stuff. I said, hey, listen, as long as Coach Frost is here, those things aren't going to take place. But
did that just stop on us? No, it was okay. So that was Saturday to Sunday. The timeline changed, the attitude change in question. And you wonder what will make a kid's mind shift, right? And is it outside influence? Is it being okay, trying to be stand up, trying to be a team dude when you get bad news. All of those things, yes. Looking your position coach in the eye on Saturday, saying those things. And then Sunday rolls around, and it was a different tone per Coach Mario Verduzco.
And then he called me on, I guess it was Sunday, and let me know, and, which I appreciated, obviously, and I wished him the best of luck if there's anything I could do for him. So I guess it's a long-winded way of answering your question. I had no idea.
He had no clue this was coming. Last thought here from Mario on the why or what changed from Jebbia Saturday to Sunday.
No, he didn't. And when he called me, he just had a different tone in his voice, you know, than when we had talked in person on Saturday. And he's such a neat young guy, you know. And he answered me when we talked on Saturday in relationship to the information I gave him, like the champion and the great teammate that I thought he was, you know. That was it. And then he called me on Sunday, and the tone was different, and I could sense it. At least I could, anyway, in my own little world. And so I just wished him the best of luck. If there's anything I could do for him, for him to let me know. But I had no idea.
Okay, so this kind of puts to bed. Now it's time for thoughts, opinion, educated guess. Mitch Sherman was nails on this yesterday. Can find the In Demand on ESPN Lincoln. Also, the podcast is back on iTunes with Hail Varsity. So all of that. You have a kid that, listen, as a family, you have to look at what's gone into this. And I'm not making excuses. I'm just laying down the facts, okay? Prominent family, California. Kid has had quarterback tutoring. He has been groomed and trained for this, and you don't win the job as a redshirt freshman. You approach it like it's your job, and I think Jebbia is the type of dude that's approached it like he wants it as his job since he's probably been in sixth grade. Private quarterback tutors, the 7-on-7 circuit, Calabasas, and you're a top 20 ranked dual threat quarter, top 20 pro style quarterback. Let me get the freaking particulars right here. But you know how big a deal he was coming here. And I think he probably wanted to stay. And that was his message initially to Mario Verduzco. Look, man, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to come back at it. You can't really fake that, I wouldn't think, unless you're an incredible actor, and I don't think he is. So, some sort of outside influence, former coach, intermediary, family, had to get in his ear and say, dude, you're good enough to start, come back west, if he heads that direction, and hit reset. And then Sunday happens, and the shot clock expires Tuesday to drop all your classes.
And, you know, he had the night to sleep on it as well. When the coaches tell you that right away, you're not going to pout and moan. I mean, especially Jebbia, that's not the type of guy he is. So he had a night to sleep on it. He talked to an outside influence, his family, coaches, like you said.
He's talking to mom and dad about this. He's had to.
And they said, hey, let's be honest, our best interest, it's going to suck leaving the program. We know you love it, but you know, it might be best to get you out of there and go west.
Well, and kids are going to listen to their families. That's just what it is. And it really just boils down to that. I'm not blaming. I'm saying it's a reality. And in that situation, you have a decision to make as the father of a quarterback prodigy, or a kid that's ranked super high, or a kid that competed to the last moments for the race as a redshirt freshman, and truth be told, probably was a better option as a number two for Nebraska last year. Just was. Remembering some things Langsdorf said. So you're not going to go against your father or mother or family's wishes. They are who you're going to listen to at this point. And Nebraska's out of luck right now. That's the long and short of this. and Nebraska is pretty savvy. Coach Frost is very savvy. Coach Verduzco has been doing this a long time. They had no idea this was going to happen, and they are going to have to suck it up. They know that, and play and hope Adrian not only grows throughout the year, which I think he totally can do, but stays healthy throughout the year. And coach up Bunch, coach up Masters, and then Cam Taylor used to quarterback in high school.
Yeah, I saw something about that. He's right, the emergency backup.
Right, like who's the break in case of emergency dude? And that's not been – they don't really want to go that far with it, but that's your Jebbia update. We'll get Searle's take on this too, because Searle's – every college kid contemplates transferring. They just do. And how do you go about it? And are you your own man – or are you still listening to mom and dad? And people need mom and dad in their lives. I'm not going to say they don't. Now, the thing is this is an epidemic that starts and ends at home. With the transfer climate, culture, and how open are you as a family to it? Are you team hopping? Are you staying put? Are you a parent that is in the coach's face because your kid's not playing? Are you a parent that's going Marv Marinovich on your own kid that's do 10 more sets of 170, son? Dad, I'm six. So, I mean, it came up in my family with baseball because God knows there's 2 or 7 or 84 new youth baseball teams that get created every year. That's all right, man. We've got a great bunch of coaches. And if Junior's batting ninth, which he was, it's because Junior can't hit the curveball. Straight ball, he hit very well. Curveball, no hit. No, in all seriousness.
The other team read the scouting report.
Well, just throw it at him. Listen, I told him point blank. You want to play third? You want to play somewhere where you have some protection in the lineup where you'll see some pitches? Do you want to get better at hitting? You're going to have to put the work in. At fielding, that means you open your eyes at third, okay? And you're going to have to just bust it, man. You got to make it a priority to get better. We're not going anywhere. And wipe that look off your face because someone else played a certain position. Man up and get better. That's how it happens. Life sucks a lot of times. And if things kick in the junk in sports, that's where you get better as a person, to get better from it. Learn from the failure, respond the right way, go get the win next time. That's all there is to it. That's the message. And transferring is all too common. Better deal, sweeter position for son or daughter. I'm not judging. If you've had a son or daughter that team hops 14 times, it's all on you. And that's all good. That might be what's best for you and your family. But the checking out because it didn't go your way when son or daughter may not be that good, I'm not down with. In this instance, it looks like that is what happened with Nebraska, with the quarterback situation, but it may not have been Jebbia being the immature one. It may be Jebbia that wanted to stay, but other influences said, you're coming home.
And I think this is a little bit different of a case, too, because let's be real. There's no chance he's starting next year unless Martinez were to get injured. He had a phenomenal year, beats him out again.
That's right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, listen, Adrian's your starter now. It's Adrian's job to keep, whether Jebbia is here or not. And it's Adrian's job to keep in game one, in game six, in game 12, okay? And it's Adrian's job to keep next spring, next summer, beyond, because you've got your replacement coming in. That's the MO of this Nebraska staff. We love you. We want you here. We want you to be good. We want to coach you up. By the way, we're looking for the next best. You either respond to it and keep your job, or you get passed by. That competition, that culture, that work ethic, that's part of this new Nebraska, or back to old Nebraska. You can't just sit and rest because you got it once. You got to keep earning it. That's what I love. That's what's going to make this program better. That's going to make this team better. And positions of influence, i.e. the quarterback that's going to win you a game, extend a play, you're going to have to win it every day in practice. So I'm all good with this. I just don't want to hit reverse on the bus that's already been driven over Jebbia if this truly wasn't his call. Right? I mean, and we don't know if it is, it isn't. No one's talked to Tristan. But that's kind of the sentiment floating out there. And well documented by Super Mario about what went on with the conversation and how things shifted. And they can't say, yeah, daddy blew things up, mommy blew things up, quarterback coach blew things up, tampering occurred with X, Y, and Z program. We don't know. Adrian just, or I should say Super Mario just laid out what happened from Saturday to Sunday. Excited to talk to Jeremiah Searles, our favorite Carolina Panther, standout Nebraska offensive lineman. We'll get Jay's take on Nebraska 2018, how the NFL's going for him in this Jebbia transfer. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Akron head coach Terry Bowden, 1 hour from now. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. Welcome in our favorite Carolina Panther, standout Husker offensive lineman Jeremiah Searles, fan of ranch with his Lazaris. Mr. Searles, how are you?
I'm doing well, Schmitty. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. Are you fired up? It's finally game week, and I know you're kind of busy tomorrow night, but your beloved Huskers finally get to kick off the Frost era on Saturday.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. I just hope that people understand Rome wasn't built in a day. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Come on now. You can do some quick...
No. I can. I know. Trust me. I've read all the stuff all over. Like, oh, no, Adrian Martinez, it might be 9-10 win season here. Like, I would be ecstatic if we did. But everyone needs to relax, understand that, like, freshman quarterback, there's going to be some growing pains, but I'm excited to see the team get out there and compete.
What's it like working with a freshman quarterback, a redshirt freshman? You worked with two, Taylor and Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand that, like, this is the first time they're going to see true, like, speed like that. Like, this is the first time that they're really going to see what it's all, like, real football is. I mean, especially for a guy like Adrian, who hasn't played football in over 2 years, I think it is. So, I mean, it's just something that's going to really take some time for him to develop and get into. So just be patient with him and then really rely heavily on the run game. I think it's going to be something that's going to be really important.
Jeremiah Searles with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Searles71_HSKR. Follow him on Twitter and watch him with Carolina. So what's your number? Do you have a prediction in mind from a win-loss total? And how boisterous are you around the Panther locker room when it comes to your big red?
Yeah, I mean, I tell people I'm really excited. And I think that if we can win 7 or 8 games this year, I think would be the peak. I think that's as high as it can go. But ultimately, I think that if you can win 6 games and get to a bowl game this year, I think that's a big improvement from last year. It's a first-year program and the whole bit. But I think anything above that is just a bonus. I think that they should win the games that they should win. That we should beat guys like Purdue, Illinois, Indiana, Northwestern, those teams. And then if we can stay competitive with the Wisconsins, the Iowas, the teams that we've just been getting beat on the last few years, we can stay competitive and give our chance a win, or give ourselves a chance to win in the fourth quarter, then I think that that's a really successful year for the Huskers.
Is there, if you could pick one West foe to defeat, who would it be, Wisconsin or Iowa?
Wisconsin.
Okay.
Wisconsin. 100%. I hate everything about them. I mean, there's literally nothing I like about that school.
Have you seen the, I think your friend Sue told your buddies at Barstool that Wisconsin is the fake Nebraska?
Yeah, I mean, they like to think they're us, but, I mean, they're not. But we just need to start beating them again so we can remind them who Big Brother is.
That's Searles, you think Nebraska fans are right now nodding their head to you. Jeremiah Searles
with man,
us.
Every old man out on their porch says yes.
Searles, talk to me about the Tristan Jebbia transfer. And the reason I ask is because every player at one point or another, most anyway, I shouldn't say every, but guys have contemplated transferring. Some do, some stay. Did you have that moment ever where you thought about checking elsewhere with Nebraska?
I really didn't. I can say honestly I never had that thought, and the reason I can say that is because I did come in and I competed very early. I competed, I ended up starting my second year, and then my third year, I got hurt that year. I tore my shoulder up, and so I had surgery that next year, and I ended up getting beat out by Jamarcus Hardrick, who was a senior at the time. And that year was extremely humbling for me. It's like, man, just because you started one year doesn't mean you're going to start the next. And it just made me really get back to work and get back after it. And I ended up starting the next two years after that. So it's just, it's a tough spot for, I think, a kid like Jebbia, who was inherited by this staff, who felt like this was probably his best chance to beat out Adrian Martinez. And I think that because he did lose the competition, that he started thinking about his future. And yes, maybe that there'll be some struggles. I mean, true freshman quarterbacks probably have a little bit of a short leash. And maybe he felt like he could get some playing time this year, or maybe he felt like maybe he could get some games in. But I think he looked at the long run and saw that his future as a quarterback here might not be what it could be somewhere else. And so I think that that's where he's at with it, as far as moving on to somewhere that maybe he feels his skill set, or feels that he can go in and a chance to compete right away, would not have a guy who's younger than him starting, because that's a tough situation, especially at the quarterback position.
You know, long-term versus short-term is how you got to approach things. But, I mean, what's your take on the climate of transfers when it comes to college football at that quarterback spot?
I mean, I've talked about it a little bit on your show. I think it's a bit crazy when you really think about it, because, yes, you bring guys in to compete, and the problem is now is who's competing with Adrian Martinez. I mean, you got McCaffrey coming in next year, who's going to be a true freshman again. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it kind of is the same thing that happened with Taylor and Tommy. I mean, once Taylor was there and he won the starting spot, and then Cody Green transferred, so there really was no one pushing Taylor. And then once Taylor graduated, there was Tommy, and then I can't even remember the kid's name, A.J. Bush or mm-hmm. something like that.
We started for Illinois this year.
Yeah, I mean, so like these kids, and it's a long-term thing, and it sucks for programs that recruit these quarterbacks and then they leave or they transfer, but I understand it to an extent that these kids want to play. I mean, you don't want to sit on the bench for 4 years if you got recruited to a school, but at the same time, there's got to be a competition factor, and there's got to be a push factor. There's got to be, man, I didn't earn it this year, but maybe I can go earn it the next year. But at the same time, that's a tough thing to do, especially when a freshman is going to start under you.
Well, there's been outcry, and you know, Nebraska fans, there's the supportive, best to you, you know, good luck wherever you end up, and then there's the Benedict Arnold, accusations, traitor, leaver. I mean, stuff like that that's out there, too. I mean, you have the Husker fan that'll take it personally, and it's not even their life. They are...
Yeah, that drives me nuts, too, by the way.
No, I know. I know it does. And spend a second on that with fan etiquette.
Well, I mean, it's not even fan etiquette. It's the fact that, like, it's like you said, like, this involves their lives to 0%. Right, I mean, Tristan Jebbia transferring does not involve Joe Blow over on the huge Husker fan. Like, it doesn't affect his life in any way, shape, or form. This kid is thinking about his immediate future, his maybe future if he wants to go play in the NFL, his future of where he wants to live for the rest of his life. I mean, there's so many factors that go into it for the kid, and for a fan to feel like they can weigh in on that factor because they think we need a backup quarterback, it's just not right, in my opinion. Like I said, Husker fans are the greatest fans in the world. I'll say that to the day I die. But at the same time, they have to understand that this is a 19-year-old kid trying to figure out his future. I mean, for him, he might see that his future is best suit elsewhere, football, life, otherwise. And I don't think that there's really, if you do take into consideration the other factors, like who's starting over him, where he sees himself. I mean, we're not in that locker room. We don't understand. We don't see what other people see. I mean, we don't know what he goes through on a daily basis. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting that fans feel like they can have their say. I mean, social media gives it such an immediate, you can send it right to the kid via Twitter, Instagram, whatever it is. And so it's not fair to the kid to have to deal with something like that. He's already, I'm sure he's not pumped about leaving. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Tristan Jebbia woke up in the morning and was like, I'm leaving Nebraska today. I mean, he's made friends. He's made connections. I'm sure it was really hard on him. I mean, I can't imagine it being easy on anyone to leave.
No, and the thing that's really tricky here for the staff is the timing of it. And it's also tricky for Jebbia timing-wise if you want to go enroll somewhere out west with the quarter system, right? I mean, you got time to do it. But timing-wise, Nebraska, I think, felt blindsided by it.
I think they probably did. And, I mean, rightfully so. They probably were blindsided by it a little bit. I mean, you don't expect a guy the day after a starter's name to transfer. But at the same time, I think Tristan probably looked at it like, if I wait another year, that's another year of eligibility gone. To where if I can go transfer somewhere, I mean, I don't know the rules or what it looks like, but he might be able to sit out this year and be able to compete next year.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have three to play, and that's ultimately one of. There's some thought, too, that his tone changed quite a bit from Saturday to Sunday, and he was super supportive, this from Coach Verduzco today, on Saturday to a different tone and tenor, and I'm out on Sunday. So I don't know if there was someone else that got to him about an opportunity, family, friends, folks somewhere else, but he shifted his narrative for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people say too, like I know I saw a tweet, I think it was Grant Winstrom, who was like, he tweeted, like, me, dad, I didn't make the starting spot, I'm going to transfer. Like, dad, like, shut up, go back to work. Me, okay. Like, I think at the quarterback position, it's very different. I think that, I mean, when you name a starting quarterback, that becomes the immediate leader of your team. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a defensive lineman, it's like I said, offensive lineman, I was starting one year, and then all of a sudden I'm not starting the next year because I got beat out, obviously, because I was hurt and there was other factors. But quarterback's a different position, especially when you're a quarterback at Nebraska. I mean, if you get named a starter, unless you are out there just throwing picks and doing terrible things, like, you're going to be the starter for a while.
Absolutely. Searles, what's coming up with you, man? How you doing? How's camp gone for Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, camp's gone well. I have a little bit of a hamstring issue going on right now, which is frustrating, but I've had a good camp, and so now it's just the worst weekend of the year is coming up here this next weekend, cut weekend. So a lot of dreams and hopes are going to keep continuing, and others are going to have to continue to work hard for it. So worst weekend of the year, but, I mean, excited for season to get rolling. I think we have a really good team up here. Or over here, I guess, in Carolina. I think that we have a good leadership system and a really good team, and I'm excited to see what we can do.
About 30 seconds. How is your putting doing?
My putting?
Yes. Have you worked on your putting when you've not been smashing into people?
I have not. The last time I golfed was at the Tyson's Treasure Chest, and we actually raised almost $25,000 at our golf outing that we had, so that was a huge success, and I thank you guys so much for helping support that, and it was the most we've raised in the 6 years that we've done it.
Well, that was an incredible outing. Jeremiah Searles with us, former Husker, Carolina Panther. Searles, thanks for the insight today. Thanks for taking time, man. Great to talk to you, and we'll be watching. Best to you this year, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Glad to be on anytime.
Absolutely. We'll bother you again. I promise you that. Jeremiah Searles, good perspective and thoughts from him. And it is unique at the quarterback spot. That is 1,000% accurate. And I hope his hammy heals up. He's been doing well for him on that line for Carolina. And Cam's as big as some of the linemen. That helps with the run game. Great cause coming up. An organization, foldsofhonor.org. Chris Thompson, Wilderness Ridge Golf coming up. Brad Edwards, Terry Bowden on the way.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We are back. It's the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Chris Thompson is in Patriot Day Golf Marathon. and honoring and supporting foldsofhonor.org. And Tony Biotta, PGA member as well with this here. Chris, nice to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
It's good to see you again. Tony, thanks for giving us a few minutes of your time. How are you?
Oh, great, Chris. And thanks for having us. And I'm here in Owosso, Oklahoma with our entire team. So we've been going crazy ever since Dan and Jack were on Fox and Friends this morning.
Good, 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 good. Well, let's start off, Chris. Tell us what you're doing coming up here Monday the 17th and kind of reset what Folds of Honor is all about. And Tony, I'll jump with you in a minute here, bud, on Folds of Honor. But Chris, you're gonna get one out trying to get 100 holes in.
Well, we're going to try. We'll see if the old body will make it that far. But my new friend, Tony Biotta, we chatted down at the PGA Championship this year.
That was a good one to go to.
Oh, it was awesome this year. And I have a mutual friend, PGA member up in Michigan, and he does the golf marathon each year, and he's raised some significant money for the Folds of Honor, and he really motivated me to get off the fence post and do something in my area. So from there, I contacted him up in Michigan, got a few ideas, and I contacted Tony, and you know, we chatted and we put this thing together. And right now, the pledges have been rolling in, so I'm super excited about what we can do to raise some money.
Tony, talk a little bit about here the Patriot Golf Day Marathon. And Folds of Honor, it is so, so important how you're involved with it, and the fact that Folds of Honor Foundation supports families of fallen or disabled soldiers through educational scholarships. Give us a little bit of your backstory.
Sure, of course, Chris, and thank you. Well, right now, Folds of Honor is primed and ready. Our scholarship department has already delivered the acceptance letters to over 4,100 scholarship recipients for this 2018-2019 academic year, to the tune of $20 million.
That's awesome.
In scholarship dollars going to colleges, universities, and vocational schools all over this great nation. And that's going to bring our total to just right around 20,000 scholarships given out since 2007. So in 11 years, we've given out right around 20,000 scholarships.
That's wonderful. And the Folds of Honor Foundation, those scholarships go to fallen or disabled soldiers, family members. And is there a family or a story specifically, Tony, that comes to mind about the Folds of Honor scholarship money that has helped a family specifically you think of or remember?
Well, I mean, there's so many of them, but
right.
The original one that got Dan Rooney energized to have the vision to create Folds of Honor and Patriot Golf Day, because Dan's a PGA professional like Chris and myself, and he was on his first tour of duty coming back from Iraq. He was on a short flight going from Chicago to Grand Rapids, Michigan. He boarded the aircraft and saw a private in dress green seated in first class, and he thought that was pretty cool that they elevated this young man to a first-class seat and didn't think anything else of it. Went back to his seat in the back of the plane right over the cargo hold in a window seat, and they took off. An hour later, they landed in Grand Rapids, and the pilot came on the intercom and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have the remains of a fallen American hero on board." And his twin brother, his name is Brock Buckland, and his twin brother, Brad, has been his escort these 8,000 miles home from Iraq. And he just asked everyone, please remain seated so that we can allow this American hero to be the first one off the aircraft. So a hush came across the cabin. It was pretty quiet. They taxied up to the gate, and as they were going up there, it was a rainy night, and Dan looked out and could see the family there waiting to receive the body and the remains of Corporal Brock Buckland. And as the cargo hold opened and the flag-draped casket came out, it got about not even halfway out, and Dan looked back in the aircraft, and more than half the people had already gotten up and left. And they had nowhere to go. It was the end of that flight, except to sleep under the blanket of freedom that we all enjoy each and every night, courtesy of the 1% that guarantee our freedom every single night that we go to sleep. So Dan was very troubled by this, that these people couldn't wait. There was no place else for them to go. He got off the aircraft. He called his wife, and he said, you know, I just can't get this picture out of my mind of this little boy. I think he's between 4 and 6 years old, with his grandmother's arms crushed around him and just hugging him as this casket came down the cargo conveyor. And he said, I got to do something for this kid. I don't know what it is, but I got to do something. I just, you know, I'm thinking of our girls, because at the time Dan had 4 girls of his own. And he's saying, you know, this could be me. And he met that reality that night. And they decided that they were going to have a golf tournament. So he was going up to Grand Rapids to meet his dad. At that time, they had just bought a golf course up there called Grand Haven. And he reached out to Brian Whitcomb, who was then the president of the PGA of America, told him his story, said, you know, I really want to raise some money for this family. Will you come up to Grand Haven? And Brian said, yes, absolutely, I will. And that day, they had the first Patriot Golf Day event, and they raised $8,513. Later that year, Brian came to the annual meeting, and I don't know, Chris, if you were at that meeting, but I sure was.
I was.
Yeah, so it was January 16th, 2008. I know that because that was my wife's birthday. Mm. And I was in that audience along with Chris, and we were all delegates at the time. And Dan told his story for the first time to the delegates of the PGA of America. There wasn't a dry eye in the room. And in the first year, Patriot Golf, they raised $1 million.
That's incredible.
So fast forward now, guys. Here we are, 2018. I can't give you the numbers for Patriot Golf Day yet because we're about to have our big weekend for Patriot Golf Day here on Labor Day. But I will tell you, as of last year, Patriot Golf Day raised over $47 million to families of people who have either been wounded or killed defending our great country.
Tony Beata is with us, PGA professional. Chris Thompson, PGA professional, Wilderness Ridge. Foldsofhonor.org is where you can log on. And it is a wonderful way to give back, help those members, those family members, those fallen soldiers, the disabled soldiers, through educational scholarships for their family. Chris is taking the challenge on. He's taking the pledge. He is playing Monday the 17th, as many holes as he can do. And you can help with the pledge on this, foldsofhonor.org. We're up against a break. Chris and Tony, hang on. I want to spend a few more minutes with you, if that's okay. But real quick, Chris, how can folks get in touch with you to match or donate or just, hey, Chris, go get them, see how much you can raise here for Folds of Honor?
Definitely. They can call me at Wilderness Ridge right at the golf shop, 402-434-5106, or they can email me, C. Thompson, which is T-H-O-M-S-O-N. At WildernessRidgeGolf.com.
A few more minutes here with Chris Thompson, Tony Beata, both PGA professionals, foldsofhonor.org. A quick timeout as we'll continue on with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. That's foldsofhonor.org. A quick timeout, back to wrap up after this.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
About 4 minutes till we wrap up hour one. Tony Beata, PGA professional, and working with foldsofhonor.org. Incredible, just an incredible organization. Patriot Day Golf Marathon goes on, and Chris Thompson of Wilderness Ridge, PGA professional, is going to be active and fundraising for Folds of Honor. Chris and Tony, thanks again for giving us a few minutes today and letting folks know about Folds of Honor. Chris, you're going to be participating the 17th. Folks can match and donate to you for Folds of Honor, and it's a scholarship fund to donate to military families who have lost a loved one in service or have a family member that is injured due to protecting our freedom. Chris, this is also close to you at home. You've had somebody at Wilderness receive a scholarship.
We did. About 5 years ago, this individual would work for us, and her father had passed away in duty, and she received a scholarship, and it was very impactful for her life and how incredibly you know, thankful she was that they Folds was there for her. So, you know, people can, for my specific marathon, they can pledge, say, I'm going to pledge $1 a hole for how many holes you're going to play, or $2 a hole, or, you know, a flat rate. Whatever works is great for the foundation.
Tony Beata also on the horn with us, and he is very active with foldsofhonor.org. Chris and Tony caught up with this down at the PGA Championships this year. What a memorable PGA. Tony, a thought here about 2 minutes here, sir. If folks want to give back to foldsofhonor.org, events coming up that they can do so, not only with Chris at Wilderness Ridge, but also from a grander scale, how can they get in touch with you, or how can they get in touch with Folds of Honor?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. They can go right to foldsofhonor.org, just as you suggested. And at the top of the page, you can click the tab for Patriot Golf Day. You can locate a participating golf course, because all these guys like Chris have registered. Some people are doing marathons. Some people have donation boxes and are collecting donation boxes. Just created a new fundraising opportunity this June with the help of a teaching professional out there by the name of Michael Haywood, who I know Chris knows as well. We have a strong brotherhood within the PGA of America. But, you know, we just created Patriot Teaching and Coaching Day, which is another opportunity to fundraise through Patriot Golf Day. And, of course, the marathon that Chris is doing, and you can do a golf tournament. We have all these events on our course locator. All you have to do is just type in your zip code, and they'll let you know the facilities that are participating around you. And I just want to say a word about Chris. He could have sat there that day when John and I were talking about participating in Patriot Golf Day, because this is a man who has given plenty to his PGA section and to the PGA of America. He's a past president of the Nebraska section, and that's where he and I hit it off well, because I'm a past president of the Central New York PGA, but he's also a board of director with the PGA of America right now. So that demands an entirely different schedule to his time, along with being a head golf professional at Wilderness Ridge. And Chris is so unselfishly going out there and raising money for our military family. So if a guy like Chris Schmidt can do it, anyone, or you know,
Chris Thompson. Someday I can hit a sand shot, partner.
But if a guy like Chris Thompson can go out there and fundraise for Folds of Honor, anyone can do it, and you can do it a number of different ways. You can, you know, it's tbiata at foldsofhonor.org to get in touch with me. It's tbiata at foldsofhonor.org. And, you know, all you got to do is call here. Everybody knows me. I'm the only Tony here. And I answer the phone all the time. So, you know, we're just so grateful that you folks at ESPN Radio and Chris want to take the time to let people know that freedom isn't free, and that, you know, we owe a debt of gratitude to our military families out there who have paid so much of a price for our freedom.
Tony, Chris, thank you so much for what you're doing, fellas.
Chris, thank you very much. Tony, great to talk to you.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, Terry Bowden coming up in 30 minutes. Head coach of Akron, we welcome in college football insider, analyst, and part of College Game Day. It is Brad Edwards, at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, the week is here, man. How are you?
It is here. We got, about 24 hours?
We do.
Something like that till it really gets good. I know we've had a few, you know, official games already, but that Northwestern Purdue game is, I think it's underrated as far as the attention it's getting. I look at those two teams as both capable of changing the Big Ten race. Neither one's going to win it, but I think both of them on a given day, especially on their home field, are capable of perhaps knocking off one of these front runners in the conference, and by doing so ends up deciding who wins the conference. So I think those are two teams worth keeping an eye on this year.
No, and to get things to touch gloves under the lights, to start things off, it's a great springboard for Northwestern or Purdue, and it's a tough hurdle to get over, already 0-1 in the West. And, it's going to be a tremendous start to the year. Brad, the news around here, two things. One, Adrian Martinez is starting quarterback. Two, Tristan Jebbia is gone. And it's the Scott Frost era that gets rolling Saturday night. A thought from you. You've seen college football a long time. You've seen very few freshmen get the nod, but you've seen a lot of Adrian Martinez as well. What's your reaction?
Yeah, so I'm not surprised that Scott Frost went in that direction. I mean, look, given the lack of experience of all the guys involved, I don't think that the freshman part of it really mattered that much. So given the opportunity to kind of start off in his first year with a guy who's going to have at least 3 years to play for him, it makes a lot of sense as you're just building for the future. And if he has as much talent as everyone believes he does, that I've read about and heard about, then I think there should be a level of excitement about next year. And obviously this year, starting to see a little bit of what he can do and what the offense can do with him. And so that's the fun part. And, it's not the only place where they've decided to go this path with a true freshman starter. There are three of them in the Big Ten. And then, of course, USC doing it as well. And I think it's interesting when you look at it from the program building standpoint, that it does make a lot of sense if your expectations for this year aren't what they typically are, to go ahead and start to get that experience at the most important position. It does make a lot of sense. Now, of course, the flip side of this is not having the backup. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you always hope for the best, obviously, but in this particular case, if they were to lose him to injury, especially early, not only does it kind of sabotage what I just talked about, which is being able to get that vital first year of experience at a time when maybe a lot isn't expected, but then you kind of open yourself up to that disaster of a season record-wise if you end up putting in someone who is much less talented to have to quarterback the majority of the game. So we'll hope that doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen for Nebraska. I hope it doesn't happen for any of the other schools that are in this position. But it's a game where people get hurt, and we'll hope for the best.
From a Nebraska big picture standpoint, is there more buzz about Nebraska this year that you've noticed on a national scale because Coach Frost is back?
Yeah, I think he has a winning streak going. It was funny. I was just talking to someone earlier about UCF and UCF opening up with a pretty nondescript game against UConn. As long as UCF still has a zero in the loss column, people will continue to be interested because they have the nation's longest winning streak. And I think to a lesser extent that applies to Scott Frost. I think there will be greater interest in Frost because he's also at Nebraska, which happens to be his alma mater as well. And so I think that as long as Nebraska is having a good season, people will continue to be interested. And I think we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. My opinion, anyway, is that while it's a nice story, I don't think people will become more interested in the Nebraska program until they actually beat someone that people believe is better than them. I think the first sign that you're going to get that Nebraska football could be back is it's not that Scott Frost is the head coach, although I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about that. But the first real sign is when they, as an underdog, a decided underdog, can knock off a Michigan or Ohio State or Michigan State, Wisconsin. And I don't know whether they'll get one of those this year or not, but you would hope from the Nebraska side, at the very least, they would be competitive in some of those games to at least, give you the give you the hope that maybe they're only a year away from being able to pull that kind of upset.
Well, they've got all of them on the road except Sparty, so they'll have a chance to take down one of those blue bloods and big-time programs this season. Brett Edwards with us, ESPN.com and Magazine College Football Insider and College Game Day. Brad, from a big picture with the Big Ten, what do you think happens with Ohio State this year?
I think it's a situation, and not that we've ever seen this exact situation anywhere else before, but there have been similar situations involving a coach where you think it could go either way. Either the players get really motivated to go play for their coach because they think the whole program and the team is being disrespected nationally, and it's just kind of a rallying point, or it's possible that some players kind of lost respect for him through all this, and maybe their desire to play for him is not as strong as it was before. We won't know until they start playing. And to tell you the truth, I don't think we're going to learn anything from the opener against Oregon State. I think Ohio State is not only so much better than Oregon State, but now I think there is a motivation. There's a chip on the shoulder because of all the outside attacks on the program that I do think they'll get revved up and just blow that team out of the stadium for this first game, which might have happened anyway, but I think there's a better chance of it happening now. I think the first sign will be when they go down to TCU, which will be the final game without Urban. I think we'll learn a little bit from that game as to, you know, what this team is, and are there reasons for them to be concerned going into Big Ten play.
Brad, coming into this week, Nick Saban still didn't declare a starter for Alabama. Any thoughts on how that QB situation is going to shape out come game day?
Yeah, I think they'll both play. I'm not sure who's going to start. I know a lot of people looked at the depth chart that came out, and whether Saban actually gave instruction for it to be written the way it was, or whether he just, you know, told his PR guy that it's an or situation and he kind of did his own thing. People look at, like, Tua Tagovailoa / Jalen Hurts on the depth chart, and the first thing they think is, okay, whether you go alphabetical by first or last name, Jalen Hurts would come first, and yet he's second. Also, Jalen Hurts has started the last 28 games at quarterback for Alabama, and he's listed second. So people are trying to read something into that. I'm still not so sure that Nick Saban won't start Jalen Hurts, even if it's only for the point of proving all the people wrong who said that they knew what he was going to do, because it would be a very Saban thing to do. But I think ultimately you're going to see both guys play and both play with the first-team offense, and it's going to be like the Georgia game all over again, although on a much lesser scale, in that there will be an opportunity to see how both guys play with the same supporting cast. And I think if Tua looks better for the second game in a row, playing with the same players around him, then he's probably your guy moving forward. I think if Jalen looks better, then it kind of complicates things, and I think the competition would continue into the season, because I do think the belief is that Tua is the better of the quarterbacks and is the one that gives them the better chance to win the national championship once we get to the end. And, of course, at Alabama, that's what it's all about, is winning the national championship. So even though they know Jalen Hurts can get them to the playoff, they know he can get them to the championship game. Can he perform well against the best defenses that they'll face? In his first 2 years as a starter, he has not played that well against the better defenses. And I think that's why a lot of people are leaning to whether that means he starts game one or doesn't start till game three. I think most people are expecting about the second half of the season he'll be the guy.
Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day with us at J. Brad Edwards, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, give me four teams that find their way to the playoff and give me a wild card.
Okay. My playoff picks, I went with the two that pretty much everybody has, Clemson and Alabama. And my other two, a little bit different, I guess. I went with two Big Ten teams. I went with Penn State and Ohio State. I went with both of them to lose one game, but Penn State beats Ohio State head-to-head, wins the conference, and they both get into the playoff. And I don't think a lot of people are picking that, although I do see a whole lot of people, whether it's two Big Ten or two SEC, taking two from one conference this year. Now that we know the committee will do it, it's a lot easier to make that pick. So that's what I went with. I tell you what I found fascinating before I get into a kind of a wild card. I don't know if you saw on ESPN.com yesterday, they did the annual release of the ESPN, you know, so-called experts picks, where a lot of people who are on air or write for ESPN just submitted their four playoff teams, and they put them all on a chart. And there were 43 who responded. I actually forgot to respond. I was on vacation. But but if you include mine, I know what mine are, and that'll get us to 44. Out of 44 people, only four put a Big 12 team in the playoff.
Jeez.
That is mind-blowing. And two picked West Virginia. So only two out of 44 picked Oklahoma, which I think most people believe is a clear-cut favorite. I mean, clear-cut favorite in that conference. So, I mean, most people are saying that Oklahoma is going to lose at least twice. And while I will acknowledge there's a big drop-off from Baker Mayfield to anybody, against that schedule, I mean, look, I didn't put him in my playoff, but I don't feel incredibly confident that Oklahoma is not going to get through with, you know, without being beaten twice. So, that one was surprising to me. As for a kind of a long shot, I would, I guess I would lean toward Florida State.
Really?
I'm talking about like outside of the top 15
in
preseason polls.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason I would go there is because they are the one team that I would give a chance to win the ACC if it's not Clemson. And I say that because DeAndre Francois has been named the quarterback, which tells me that he's recovered from his injury. He's healthy. He was pretty good as a freshman 2 years ago. And if he can get back to that point or be even better, I think they're good enough across the board at all the positions to match up with Clemson. Very few teams in the country are. Florida State, I believe, has the talent to do that, and the game is in Tallahassee. And so if they beat Clemson, I think that means they're good enough to be able to get through the rest of the conference schedule without losing more than once. And if they were able to do that, then I think they would have a you know, decent chance of getting into the playoff. And so that's why I would go with Florida State. There's so many other teams that I would give a chance to, but I think they're all sitting there in the top 15 of the polls.
Brad, got a couple minutes here. Game of the weekend is who? Is it Washington, Auburn, Michigan, Notre Dame, Miami, LSU, Virginia Tech, Florida State?
I think it's Michigan, Notre Dame. There are a lot of things I'm interested in that game. I'm interested in Notre Dame because I think they have the schedule to allow them to make the playoff if they're good enough on the field. In other words, if they are a top 10 caliber team, that's the question I have. If they are, I think the schedule sets up really well for them. We'll find out on Saturday if they are. Michigan, I'm like everyone else, can't wait to see what Shea Patterson does. I can't wait to see how Harbaugh designs the offense and whether they try to play to his strengths or whether it's just a typical looking Michigan offense. But if Michigan gets good quarterback play, their defense is obviously good enough for them to be a threat. So I think either of those teams is a playoff contender. The team that I think really has the most riding on week one is Washington. Washington, I think, is the only top 25 team that you could make a slam dunk case that their season opener is the most difficult game on their schedule. I think you could make a great case that Auburn is the best team they'll play all year, although you could argue for someone like Stanford. But the Stanford game is at Washington. Playing Auburn in Atlanta is not a neutral field. It's like semi-neutral, almost a true road game. And so no question in my mind, this is the toughest hurdle that Washington has to clear. If they do it, I love their chances of making the playoff. If they don't, not only am I, you know, much less optimistic about Washington, but I think the entire Pac-12 could be in trouble if they lose this. So I think it's a big game, not only for a team, but also for an entire conference.
I agree with you. About 20 seconds. What happened Saturday night in Lincoln as far as the atmosphere of the Juice? Do you think it'll be something
It'll be awesome. Especially for an opponent of that caliber, you're typically not going to get the type of excitement that you'll have in this one. It's not just the usual enthusiasm over a new coach and a new beginning, but because of who the new coach is and the new quarterback on top of it that everybody can't wait to see. It's going to be a unique atmosphere for a season opener, I think.
Brad, have a great time this weekend with your game. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. We'll get caught up next week, and we're off and running. Brad, thanks for a few today, bud.
All right, man. You can tell me all about the Nebraska game, because I'm guessing I will catch very little of it, given what else is going on in college football that
I hear you. Absolutely.
All right.
Take care, bud. Thanks again.
See you guys.
There he is, Brad Edwards with us. Terry Bowden, up next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, season opener 2018. Welcome in, head coach of Akron, 25 years as a head man, Terry Bowden with us. Coach, thanks for a few minutes. How are you today?
I'm doing good. We've had good weather over here in Northeast Ohio, and that's always good when we have good weather up here.
It is, and I remember you being in Lincoln for some speaking engagements, some work with ABC. It's going to be nice to have you back in Memorial Stadium Saturday night. Tell Nebraska fans about Akron, about what's coming back for you. Start with your quarterback, Cato Nelson.
Well, Cato, our quarterback, he'll be a redshirt sophomore, so he's got 3 years to go. He started the last three games, maybe four games last year when our senior got suspended, and he started as a redshirt freshman last year. We won two out of maybe one, two, lost two. But he's going to be a fine quarterback. He's kind of the quarterback we had tapped as our quarterback in waiting, the one that we had hoped to build for the future of him. So we think he's a fine young man, a fine quarterback, and he'll get better as time goes on. This is not a good game to put a lot of pressure on him and under the fire in Memorial Stadium, but the only way to get better is to play and play good people. So Cato is a good quarterback. I've had some good ones in my time, and he's a good one. But again, he's going to be tested probably greater now today, tomorrow, Saturday, more than he's been.
Terry Bowden, head coach of Akron, with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. What's the secret to getting those young guys ready? What's the secret to finding the guy you think can step in as a young player and perform?
Well, you know, you've got to. I mean, you got to recruit well. You got to start with something. You know, there's the basic. They got to be able to throw it. You know, accuracy and decision making are the two most important things for a quarterback. Right, decision making, great accuracy, but also leadership and the intangibles, being able to lead a team and run your offense. And I think Cato Nelson has those qualities. He just doesn't have the experience yet, and we're going up against a foe that's a lot stronger than we are. But I think in the over the years you recruit a quarterback more in the living room than any other position. You can go out and recruit a lot of players by video, but you cannot recruit a quarterback by video. You got to be in the living room. You got to know what kind of person he is, what kind of leadership skills he has, what kind of how he deals with people, how he relates. And I've always felt that that's a little different recruitment, because that position you can't win in Little League, high school, college, or pro without a winner at that position. And so when you get one, you're lucky, because if you don't have one, you're in trouble.
Coach, what's the next step for Akron? 7-7 last year, but you won your division. You've got the only bowl win in Akron history. Two out of the last 3 years you've gone bowling. You got a lot of guys back. I think 15 starters. What can this year be?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're talking about what are our goals. And, again, when you talk about Saturday, it's going to be to play as well as we can against Nebraska. But, you know, 7 years ago, this will be my seventh season at Akron. Akron had three straight 1-11 seasons. Akron probably easily the worst team in the Mid-American Conference, probably the worst team in America stat-wise. And now, you know, 6 years later, we're coming off playing for the conference championship and two bowls in the last 3 years. And eight-win season was the most we've ever won 2 years ago as a Division I team. And so now the one thing we haven't done is win the conference, and that's our goal, is to win the conference. We beat our rival. Our rival is Kent State. Their stadium is 11 miles from our stadium, so you can imagine having a rival like that across the street. So we've beaten them three times in a row. But again, we open up almost every season. You got to understand the MAC 7-7 is pretty mediocre in most places, but in the Mid-American Conference, our non-conference schedule almost always is tougher than our conference schedule. After Nebraska, we play Iowa State at Iowa State, Northwestern at Northwestern. Both those teams won their bowl games. And so we play three Power Five teams. We pay a lot of bills that way. So it doesn't mean you're going to be undefeated usually, but it does mean you learn how to play. You play your hardest, you get better, and you have a chance to win your conference. Because if you can imagine, in the Mid-American Conference, and we've had two teams since I've been here, that have gone undefeated, and they're not going to make the Final Four. I mean, they don't. If you have one loss in the Big 12, you're going to get ranked ahead of no losses in the MAC. So, our main goal is to get a good conference, non-conference schedule that takes our kids to some nice places. Maybe upset somebody. We beat Pitt a couple of years ago. We almost beat Michigan 4 years ago. And then make pay your bills with that, and then go out there and try to win your conference, go to a nice bowl. That's kind of where it all leads to. So that's kind of where we are now. Our goal, once we get there, our goal right now is one thing. That's to play as well as we can against Nebraska. But overall, I think our kids know that the ultimate prize here is to win the conference.
Terry Bowden, a couple more minutes with us. Hail Varsity Radio, head coach of Akron. Coach, a thought here on Scott Frost. He's making the jump from Group of Five to his alma mater, yeah. And he named a quarterback this weekend, Adrian Martinez. Have you had much of a chance to see or hear much about Martinez? Mm-hmm. And what do you think of Coach Frost?
Well, you know, we watched the spring game, and he looked like the best quarterback. I've seen interviews that Scott has taken. He treats that position like he treats other positions, and being a former quarterback that played for a national and won a national championship, you know, he is going to play the best guy. And I think he did it at Central Florida. He found a guy he could build his future with that also was the best guy on the team, and you just go with it. You go with it. And I think his relationship to his quarterback is always going to be very close. You know, I coached my quarterbacks for years. My very first quarterback was Jimbo Fisher that I signed out of high school in 1983.
Really?
1983. And he was my first quarterback I ever signed as a football coach in college. But he was a great leader. He's too short to be an NFL guy. But, you know, the qualities that they have. So he'll know that they will be, that quarterback will be the right guy for Nebraska. And Scott Frost, he'll make that transition so easy. I know when I went from Stanford University to Auburn when I was 36 years old, we won our first 20 games before we ever lost. We won 11 straight the first year and won 9 straight before we lost. But Scott has that kind of, he's got the intangible qualities of a champion. I remember in 97 when he led Nebraska to a championship. I was at Auburn. We were playing Peyton Manning in the SEC championship game. That's how long ago that was. But he was a winner then. He's a winner now. He's very fortunate, and I think my dad would tell you this and all of us, to be coached by one of the great men in college football, Tom Osborne.
Well,
I think that teaches you some qualities that you can't ever forget.
Coach Bowden is with us. Coach, let's spend a second there because Nebraska – by all accounts, a special place to your father, and also you. Mm-hmm. You were a GA, weren't you, when your father came into Lincoln in 1980?
I sure was. In 1980, I was a graduate assistant. My brother Tommy, who was the head coach at Clemson for 10 years, was a graduate assistant. My brother Jeff, who's on my staff and was a coordinator at Florida State for years, he's my receiver coach. He was on the team, walk-on the team, and that was probably one of my dad's first signature wins. I mean, he went undefeated the year before. They'd have anybody beating a number 3 or 4 ranked Nebraska. Nebraska fumbled, I think, on the 4-yard line going in the last play of the game going in to win the game. But it was, he always cherishes that game. And now I was at the 93, you know, his first national championship
against
Nebraska in 93. And that was my first year at Auburn, and we were on probation from the previous coach. So I got to go sit at that game. Well, a lot of people don't remember is in Nebraska was lining up for a very makeable field goal to win that game, and they missed it. But that was his first national championship. But again, I know he has one of his closest friends was Tom Osborne, and I think all of us have such great respect for the great fans at Nebraska. And I will say this, we're coming in there to play as hard as we can, and we want to win as bad as you could want to win. But when all of it is said and done, my players will have no greater experience than to come into Lincoln, Nebraska and play at Memorial Stadium.
Terry Bowden's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, head coach at Akron. The Zips come in Saturday night, kickoff, 7 o'clock. Coach, what would have happened had Auburn mm-hmm. taken on Florida State in 93?
You know what? I'm going to say this. Dad had great talent. Derek Brooks and Ward.
Charlie Dunn, Ward.
His quarterback was Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy winner. He had so many great players, but we had something. We had something that's intangible. We had this ability to win ball games. We had a team, a great team that just found ways to win. We beat the defending national champion Alabama. We beat Florida, that was like ranked number 1 in the country that year. LSU. I guess most people would have bet on Florida State. And my dad would probably tell you by all means you'd have won. But I think that team was that was one of those chemistry teams. It's like I bet you Scott Frost had the same type of team last year at Central Florida. They just found a way to win ball games, and that's one thing. You know, if you have a team that finds a way to win, that can override talent a lot of times.
Coach, I want to talk about Auburn for a second. I mean, your first 20 games, you're undefeated. You go 11-0. You sweep Spurrier. I mean, Florida was hot, right? They're number one. They're the preseason
number one. Yeah.
You go win in the swamp. I think you're probably the only SEC coach to sweep him in back-to-back years.
Well, I know we were the first team to beat him at the swamp and at Auburn. But we, like I say, we just, you know, he lost to Florida State at Tallahassee and us for 2 years. We were the only teams that beat him with my dad and I. And we have great respect for Steve because he's such a great coach, did a great job. And I think in between Coach Osborne's three national championships and my dad's two in the 90s, Steve popped one in there as well at Florida. But you just, like I say, you get on these hot streaks and you can win football games. And I thought the funny thing I remember is we had won 16 straight games, every game in 93, the first five in 94, and we were 17.5-point underdogs to Florida at their stadium, and we beat them on the last play of the game. But you know, those were great memories. I took 10 years off. I know a lot of people don't. After I left Auburn, I went to work for ABC Sports for 10 years and enjoyed that. I kind of did a Dick Vermeil, John Gruden thing. And then I come back and the only guy I can't beat is Frank Solich. I finally beat him after losing to him for 5 years. I finally beat Frank down in Ohio.
Well, you'll start the year with Frost and end the year with Solich in November 23rd.
Right.
Terry Bowden, head coach of Akron with us. Coach, it'll be great to see you again. Best to you and your squad. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here on Hail Varsity tonight.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Take care. Terry Bowden with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Good stuff from the coach. He would do his radio show with Jack O'Root when he would be in town here. He did some speaking engagements in Lincoln, so he knows our ESPN Lincoln studio pretty well. That was cool to talk with him, talk some college football with him. Terry Bowden, man, he's a lot of fun, and his Auburn teams, they stuck it to Spurrier, bro. I mean, they totally did. No one beat Spurrier. Nobody beat Spurrier in the swamp, but Bowden's team did it. So it'd been kind of funny to have Mr. Bobby Bowden, Terry Bowden, send Spurrier a Christmas card in 93 and 94 because those were Spurrier's only losses. Yeah, that 93 team, Auburn was really, really good. Nebraska, you know how good they were. Florida State won it and didn't beat Notre Dame, and Lou Holtz is still PO'd. A Jock Doc on the way. Your chance will get you qualified twice before 6 for Nebraska-Akron tickets. Listen for that sounder as we'll continue on with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Football season is here. That's awesome. NFL's just around the corner as well. And I'm sure you're getting ready for your fantasy draft.
That's right. Got to start thinking more about that, though. I'm not sure where we're going to go with the quarterback.
Carson Wentz is on our team, and Friday's the D-Day for Philadelphia to name the starter, whether it's Foles, who just won a Super Bowl, or Wentz, who is incredible and MVP-esque, right? The question I have for you here is Wentz, and not only the outlook for him and his knee off of the ACL last year, but the fact that the guy hasn't taken any contact. He got injured late last year. Kind of break this down for me, if you could, and for fellow fantasy players here, the outlook on Carson Wentz.
You look at him, I kind of look at the timetable. I think we're probably somewhere around that 9-month mark out from him post-surgery, somewhere there 9-10 months, which honestly is, in the big scheme of things, I think there's a big push to kind of get athletes further out, kind of towards that 9-month 9-month recovery period. And so he kind of falls within that window. You know, the magic number that's kind of been out there for a while has always been, you know, 6 ACL is going to be a 6-month recovery. But there's been a real push to kind of make that a little longer, especially over the past couple of years as we've looked at more of kind of the athlete's confidence side, mental aspect side, and really looked closer at kind of their physiology in terms of their quad. Are they really ready to go back? And sure, there's probably some that are. There's some that might be ready a little earlier, at least physiologically. But I think mentally, most of those athletes are probably not ready until 7 or 9 months. And I think you know, the Eagles are kind of playing into that a bit. There's so many factors here, though, with him. You know, he had the ACL, not certain kind of what other things were on top of that injury, such as like maybe a cartilage injury, maybe a meniscus injury that either had to be either cleaned up or sewed back together. You start coupling those factors into it, and that definitely will delay some of that recovery for him. But then you start playing the business management game, the professional management game with him, and you've got Nick Foles as your quarterback. You got Carson Wentz. You got plenty of time to rest this guy. Why not put him 9 or 10 months down the road? Make sure he is really solid, and then put him out there for contact. And so, there's a lot of different variables and factors at play here, and I think all of them probably do play a role with their decision-making process with him and his contact.
Now, a report here from Bleacher Report says that it may be week 3. Is that closer to that 9-month timeline or beyond that you were touching on earlier, just to be sure when it comes to comfort mentally, physically, also the quad and the surrounding areas?
No, I think so. You know, I think, again, I think they're kind of, the stars are aligning there in a position to push him out a little bit more in his recovery. You know, I'm sure there probably is maybe a little bit of an issue with, kind of where the quad is at. You would think they would have given him a little bit of some contact time.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the preseason, just a couple of snaps if they thought that, physiologically he was ready to roll. And so that would kind of be my thought process for him. So you wonder if maybe physiologically he's a little bit off, maybe took a few extra steps to go through some of his rehab process. But that's some of the decisions they have to make for sure.
Dr. Brandon, let's touch on what Wentz was so good at, and that is, we took care of the football, 33 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions. So that's a mental thing. I mean, he's good there. But physically, he was just perfect for so many, man, because he could move. He was a tough runner. Not that he ran a lot, but he could do it. And he was mobile in the pocket. I mean, it's a lot like Aaron Rodgers, right? Just kind of those feet that can extend plays and also scramble a tad bit for you. What's the 2018 Carson Wentz going to look like with this ACL repair in the pocket? What do you envision?
Yeah, I think you touched on some really good points there. And it'd be interesting to look at athletes of his caliber, quarterback play in particular at that level, and how those guys look when they come back off an ACL. I think that first season is definitely very different for them than the previous year, before they had the ACL. I think those things you touched on, that ability to cut, that ability to feel good about, standing up a linebacker or hitting a defensive back as he's kind of coming around trying to stretch the play, that ability to have the speed to kind of get to the sideline, stretch the play out, make a throw kind of on the run, I think that will be different for him, at least initially. The question will he be able to obtain some of those things here over the next, say maybe like a November, December part of the season. There's a good chance that he'll be able to do that. But I think early on you'll see some definite changes there. Clearly it'll be, partly on him, not having the confidence, trying to test things out, but also there'll be kind of a, I would assume some conservatism by the coaching staff to keep him away from those kind of things. And so I think the early Carson Wentz, that's kind of what we're going to see. But I think as we push out more towards November, December, all things going well for him, I think you'll start to see that same kind of Carson Wentz start to show up. And then I would say as he kind of goes through the offseason, gets more rehab on this, more comfortable taking contact, I think by the time you get into next year, for sure, I think you'll start to see kind of the old, Carson Wentz come back. With what he's required to do and this kind of injury, it's kind of just purely ACL, I think he'll be able to get back and do most things. Again, where we start to see, kind of a real breakdown in some of their previous playing ability would be those other kind of accessory injuries that are added on that we've mentioned before, the cartilage injury or a meniscus tear type deal. Those can be things that kind of just nag at an athlete. They maybe change their mechanics or physiology just enough that it might limit some of his ability to kind of stretch those plays. And so those would be the things I'd worry about for him kind of going forward in the future. Obviously, it depends on what the surgeon saw at the time of surgery in terms of that.
He may be brace dependent the rest of his career. What's that mean to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a definitely a hot topic in orthopedics. What do you do about braces and athletes that have had, ACL tears or even braces for other types of pathology as well. But ACLs in particular, there's never been a study that showed that wearing an ACL brace will prevent you from having another ACL tear, okay? And so it's important to kind of have that out off the table. So you see all these athletes, though, wearing the braces after they have an ACL. There are some surgeons that choose not to do that, and that's very reasonable, and they have, good data to back that up. Where I think braces, at least initially, are effective are with athletes who are kind of gaining that confidence, kind of getting back into that kind of early contact phase. I think braces help them just feel better. And so, again, that's kind of an anecdotal study. I don't have great data to base that upon other than my own experience with athletes and some of my other colleagues as well. And so that's where I think that's helpful. Now, this concept of, brace dependent, I wouldn't really say that, anybody's need from an ACL perspective is really brace dependent, because essentially it's not going to do that for you. If you have an ACL graft that's stretched out or you have an ACL that's a partial tear that's not, giving the stability you need, unfortunately a brace is not going to make up for that. And so then it becomes a question of if that athlete's going to wear a brace long term, it's probably more an issue of it feels good, it's comfortable, I'm confident I'm going to continue to use it, it doesn't slow me down, reasonable. But in the end, you can make the argument on the other side, you don't really need that brace. If you get hit there or land just wrong, you still could tear your ACL, despite the brace. And so, again, that's a hot topic. That's hard to determine kind of where people stand on that line. My thought process for that has always been, I'd like my athletes to be in a brace a year after the injury. I think it helps their confidence early on. Obviously, it's a discussion I'll have with the family. And there are some families that say, doc, I just don't want to do that. There's no data to back that up. And we feel comfortable going without the brace, and that's okay. As long as we go over the risks and benefits of doing that, that's okay. But I do think when I see those athletes that wear that brace for a year, they feel good about it. But I do see a lot of them after a year take the brace off and feel good then and never have any other issues.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up again. Good stuff.
That's great stuff. Hey, you take care, Chris. Have a good week.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Good show today. Thanks for tuning in. And big thanks to Jeremiah Searles, Brad Edwards of ESPN, and Terry Bowden of Akron, and Chris Thompson and Tony Biotta, both PGA champions, members of the PGA, foldsofhonor.org. Please look at that site tonight when it comes to helping out military families who've lost loved ones, and also, your chance to donate back to scholarship funds for those family members to further their education with Folds of Honor. Tomorrow, loaded up, Tom Dienhart, Big Ten insider, going to be with us. We'll run down Mr. Brandon L. Vogel of Hail Varsity. And it is a Thursday, which means it's Gary Barnett Thursday. It's Barney Thursday. So we'll talk to Coach Barnett, get his take on Martinez, on Frost, on Nebraska, on how much Pepto a coach takes when a freshman runs out there. We'll also do a giveaway at 5:25 for you. Listen for your name to win Nebraska Akron tickets. Miss any part of the show, iTunes is working. HailVarsity.com will have the podcast. ESPN Lincoln and Hail Varsity will have some of the audio highlights of today. Danny Burke crushing it. It's always the pride of Chicago. Let's take caller 7 and 8 right now.
Dear Lord, in the battles we go through life, we ask for a chance that's fair. Chance to get all the stripes. Chance to do or dare. If we should win, let it be by the code. Our faith and honor held high. If we should lose, stand by the road. Cheers, the winners go by.
Says to get an opportunity to come back here is special to me. Words can't describe how much it means to me to be back here in a place that I love, a place that I understand, a place that I want to represent.
Caller 7, caller 8 qualifies now. 800-825-5865 or 466-3776. Qualify now. Your chance at Nebraska-Akron tickets. That drawing tomorrow at 525 here on Hail Varsity. A shout-out to Lincoln Lutheran and their wideout Colin Morrison. We're talking a big game for him, a big game for James Admiral, the quarterback. 7 touchdowns. Lincoln Lutheran 47-0 over Omaha Concordia. That's all good. So Moose, avid listener. Congrats, man. Plenty of football going on for high school. We'll be at the Graduate. We want to see you at the Graduate. Myself, Jay Moore, graduate at 9th and P is where we get things kicked off. Home football Fridays. So can we do this again, or are we out of time, Danny? Danny's working the phones, crushing the phones. Do we have time? No? Yes?
We don't have enough time for the sounder.
Yeah, but the sounder's kind of fun. Can we sneak it in, sort of, kind of?
We have time for this sounder, though.
Okay, that means, like, shut up and go.
We can still give away more, however.
Okay, so we'll take callers 3 and 4 right now, because I was kind of a...
Well, we can do callers. You did 7 and 8. We'll do 9 and 10.
Okay,
we'll
so callers 9. Okay, yeah. You're the doctor. we were slammed in hour 1, so there you go. We'll give you a chance to qualify tomorrow. Back with you at 4 on Hail Varsity. Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt, thanks for tuning in.